If you're watching or listening to the audio, you can't see behind me, but there are three portraits behind me and they have three words on them. Consistency, persistency, and patience. Those are my superpower, Richard. Consistency, which is the ability to show up every week and do the same thing every week, week after week. Persistency is to keep doing it after everybody quits. And then patience is knowing that this is a very long game and you have to enjoy the process if you're going to have success. And I was not given any special skill. I was not given any special talent. And by the way, I did not have this as a kid. This was a learned skill over time. But I really started developing it late in college when I realized I had a chance to maybe play pro baseball.
Yeah.
This consistency of putting in the work off the field when no one is watching is what's going to help me get to the next level. And I tell you, if there's one thing right now that we leverage as our superpower here at Complete Game Consulting, it's that consistency.
Yeah.
Our ability to show up every week, create content, put out what we need to do, run the process to grow our business. And that's the advice I'd give any entrepreneur. You want to have success in business, be consistent.
Heroes are an inspiring group of people. Every one of them, from the larger-than-life comic book heroes you see on the big silver screen, to everyday heroes that let us live the privileged lives we do. Every hero has a story to tell. From the doctor saving lives at your local hospital, to the war veteran down the street who risked his life for our freedom, to the police officers and the firefighters who risk their safety to ensure ours. Every hero is special and every story worth telling. But there is one class of heroes that I think is often ignored. The entrepreneur, the creator, the producer. The ones who look at the problems in this world and think to themselves, you know what, I can fix that. I can help people. I can make a difference. And they go out and do exactly that by creating a new product or introducing a new service. Some go on to change the world. Others make a world of difference to their customers. Welcome to the Hero Show. Join us as we pull back the masks on the world's finest heropreneurs and learn the secrets to their powers, their success, and their influence so you can use those secrets to attract more sales, make more money, and experience more freedom in your business. I'm your host, Richard Matthews, and we are on in 3, 2, 1.
Hello and welcome back to The Hero Show. My name is Richard Matthews, and I have the pleasure today of having Andy Neary on the phone. Are you there, Andy?
I am, Richard. Excited to be here.
Awesome. Glad to have you. So I know you were just talking before we got on here where we're at, and I know my audience always wanted to know because we're traveling. We are currently in Southern California in Temescal Valley visiting friends and family out here. Where are you coming in from?
I am here in dull and gray South Central Wisconsin. We just moved back from Colorado after 9 years. And I won't lie, Richard, I'm struggling with the winter here. It's a little too gray for me. Yeah. I'm used to that Colorado sun.
I'm in Southern California, and we've got rain for the next 4 days, which is not very typical of SoCal. And I got a little TikTok video that showed up on my wife's feed this morning that was like, check in with your Southern California friends. We're not okay. Like, it's raining. And it's like, you know, I think the temperature is 54, right? That's cold, right?
Like, well, I'll tell you what, I got to share this. So we grew up in Wisconsin, moved out to Colorado, and just moved back. But when we grew up in Wisconsin, I always thought this seasonal depression thing was hokey.
Yeah.
And then we moved out to Colorado and I realized, like, no, I get it. Cause in Colorado, if it went more than 3 days without sun, people lost their minds.
Oh yeah. So like as a Southern California kid born and raised, like it gets to 64 degrees and I'm like, I'm frozen. Cause like my body freezes at 65.
You don't want to come visit me right now.
We got like family in Illinois and in Iowa and we're going to go visit and be cold. I'm like, oh man, you realize the South exists, right? Like you guys can move and it's my joke. So before we get too far into this, I want to dive into your bio real quick and then we'll start getting into your story. So Andy Neary is a former professional baseball player, 2-time Ironman finisher, business coach, and founder of Complete Game Consulting, combining the skills and talents he used to compete in professional baseball and Ironman. Andy's on a mission to help businesses and insurance professionals succeed in their careers and in life. He helps insurance professionals target the right audience at the right time. His programs help people cultivate the off-field habits, mindset, and rituals that lead to all-star performances. So with that brief introduction, what I want to start off with is, what are you known for, right? What's your business like? Who do you serve? What do you do for them?
Great question. When people ask me, what do you do better than anybody else, Andy? I'd say our team specializes in helping producers build credibility with their prospects before they ever meet them. And that's done because the way we prospect, Richard, has changed. If you're in sales back in the day, it was all cold calls, cold email, door to door. Well, nowadays, there's so many different channels you can use to get attention, talking about online, social media, things like that, podcasts, right? we teach people how to use the modern forms of marketing to get attention from their prospects and get their prospects to build credibility with their prospects before they ever meet them.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I know one of the things that I tell people all the time is that the information age died. YouTube and TikTok killed it, and you're in the trust age now. And what I tell people the trust age is this, the idea that in order for you to get a prospect, you have to build the know, like, and trust before they become a lead. Right? Not after they become a lead, which is last generation type marketing stuff. And the businesses that are actually taking advantage of that are seeing a lot of success. And so like in our business, we work with a lot of different industries. So what's interesting to me, and you might know where this is at since you work a lot with insurance professionals, is you have like categories of businesses that follow the marketing bell curve of innovation. And so like your coaches and consultants and online agencies will be like at the front end of the technology. And then you'll have like your service professionals, we'll get into like lawyers and doctors and insurance agents. And then you'll have like the back end of the bell curve, which is like construction and electricians and plumbing and like pest control companies that are like at the back end of the technology bell curve. And so like the marketing thing now is like, if you start getting into this content creation and building an audience and doing that kind of stuff now, and you're in like the insurance industry space, or you're in the legal space, you're probably one of the few in your industry that are playing with these tools and doing that. So it just gives you a humongous step up over the competition. You see that?
Oh yeah. I mean, you talk about the bell curve, Richard, if they're, you know, late adopters are on one side of the bell curve, when it comes to modern marketing, the insurance is definitely on the late adopter side. And I think part of the reason for that is if you look at our industry, the average age is still pushing 60 years old. Mm-hmm. And so these are folks that were brought up selling in the 90s, sometimes even in the 80s. And what's happened is everything has shifted the way we market, right? In 2020, fast forwarded everything.
Oh yeah.
And I think a lot of people just haven't caught up to what works. And here's what's happening in our industry is those folks that are 55, 60 years old, they're at a place in their business where they don't have to grow as much as they have to maintain
yeah.
what they already have. And so you have all these young producers getting in the industry who grew up with social media, grew up with technology, but they're being trained by people who are still teaching them to do it the way they did it in the 90s. Mm-hmm. And so there's this huge gap right now to help producers how to learn how to win using the modern forms of marketing. And that's the gap we're trying to serve.
Yeah. So what's really fascinating there, again, you'll probably understand this too, is your younger buyers, right? So you're talking about your young producers, right? The ones who are actually making business happen, but the people that are buying from them, you know, your millennial generation, your Gen Z, which is starting to come into their money buying years, right? Like right now, just the first part of that generation is getting into their early 20s and whatnot. So like those two generations have grown up buying differently than Gen X or the baby boomer generation or the greatest generation. They all, their buying habits are different, and they do something that I have lovingly starting to refer to as a heartbeat check on businesses. And so what the heartbeat check is, when they go to like hire someone, whether it's a real estate agent or an insurance professional or a pest control, it doesn't matter what it is, what they're going to do is they're going to go to their favorite social media channel. And you may not know what that is, right? It could be TikTok, it could be Facebook, it could be Instagram, it could be any one of these social media channels. And they're going to look you up and they're going to look for the heartbeat. And the heartbeat is, when was the last time that you posted something relevant, right? And so if it was like 6 months ago or 2 years ago, or, you know, you inconsistently publish stuff, they're like, that business doesn't have a heartbeat. And they will pick the business that has a consistent heartbeat, even if it's just a monthly heartbeat. Like, the heartbeat is there, you exist, right? And so that's what I've started referring to it as, a heartbeat check, because the younger generations absolutely perform heartbeat checks, whether or not they're, that's what they would call it, but that's what they do with businesses. They go and look, are they?
I didn't mean to cut you off there. I love the way you said that. I've never referred to it as a heartbeat check, but what we tell people is, are you searchable?
Yeah.
Because nowadays, what do people do? They Google you, right? And if somebody Googles you, are you searchable? Am I going to see a page one full of your content? If I don't, you lose credibility with me.
Yeah.
And so I love that concept of the heartbeat, because that's really what it is. Almost like, do you have an online heartbeat?
Yeah.
Because it is so important these days.
That's the reason I like the heartbeat, is because it gets that consistency sort of like picture in people's heads of like, hey, if it should be like, ideally, you got something coming up every day, right? As a millennial buyer, if you're comparing, you know, your pest control guy who's posted once in the last 6 months, and then maybe once before that, and the guy who's posting stuff on TikTok every day about the work that he's doing, who are you hiring? Right? Like, you're hiring the guy who's posting content regularly, which is, you know, for better or worse, that's just the way the market is moving. So you have to move that direction with your business if you want to win.
Yeah, I agree. I was just listening to a Gary Vee clip a couple of weeks ago, and he was talking about how he had coached a gentleman. I think the guy actually owns a business here in Wisconsin, asphalt paving. asphalt paving.
Yeah.
And he told him that he needed to be on TikTok. And so the guy started creating TikTok videos for asphalt paving, and he doubled his business in 1 year.
That's amazing, right? And that's just one platform, just one, right? There's a lot of platforms,
and
where there's a lot of
a business like asphalt paving. People right? would say there is no way somebody's going to benefit from social media content if they run a business like concrete or asphalt. No, it works today because you have to have that heartbeat online.
You have to have that heartbeat. So that's, I think that's a great place to start, just as, you know, understanding what it is that you guys do. So you help insurance professionals understand how to do and how to build that. So what I want to get into next is your origin story, right? So every good comic book hero has an origin story. It's the thing that made you into the hero you are today. And we want to hear that story. Were you born a hero, or were you bit by a radioactive spider that made you want to help insurance agents with their online marketing? Where did you start in a job and eventually become an entrepreneur? Basically, where did you come from?
I love that question, because I'm actually going to do a TED talk about this, Richard. I think a lot of entrepreneurs think when they grow up that the people we all follow today, they all have this rag to riches story, or somehow they overcame some unbelievable odds to get to where they are. I had the most average childhood anybody could ever have. I was raised by two great parents. I was literally the definition of middle income in this family, or in this country. I was a little overweight as a kid, but everything about my childhood was average. I did not have a hard childhood.
Yeah.
But just because you had an average upbringing doesn't mean you can't go on to have big time success. And early on, you know, where I came from, I struggled to get attention as a kid because I was an overweight kid. And so I was that kid who tried to just fit in anywhere I went, because whenever I got attention, it was usually negative. You know, I talk about this in some of my keynotes. My biggest enemy in grade school was not the bully on the playground. It was the annual presidential fitness test. Because when you're an overweight kid, you struggle with pull-ups, push-ups, sit and reach, and climbing the ropes, right? And so as a kid, I just wanted to fit in. And it was so easy to look past me because I never wanted attention. But there was always one place I was okay getting attention, and that was on the baseball field. I grew up in a baseball family. My dad played college baseball. He was the longtime high school baseball coach where I went to high school. And so I grew up having a pretty successful baseball career, which led to playing college ball at University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, 30 miles east of where I live. And I had a good college career as well. It was up and down, but at the back end of the career, I had a successful run, which gave me the opportunity to sign a free agent contract with the Milwaukee Brewers, which was kind of cool because they were the team I grew up for rooting when I was a kid. And so if you think about it from a superhero concept, this is where I went back to being the chunky kid again. I feel like it's when Peter Parker goes back to being Peter Parker from Spider-Man. Because when I got to pro baseball, all those fears I had of not belonging came back. When you're a free agent who didn't sign for much money, you're playing with kids who sign for millions, it's easy to have that feeling like you don't belong. And I let all the fears of judgment, comparison, and failure get to me, because when you're a free agent, a bad day on the mound could easily be your last day. You're easily cuttable. And so living in that fear, I think, is what defined my pro baseball career. And it's why I lasted only 2 years in pro baseball, is because I did not reach my full potential because I let those fears dominate who I was.
Yeah, that's really fascinating. So how did you go from a pro baseball career to what you do now?
Like everybody else, I found my way into this industry. I had a family friend who suggested I should try this thing called insurance, and I went to work for him. But shortly after he hired me, he had a heart attack and he had to retire. And at the same time, my sales manager at the same organization left. So here I was, 22 years old, without a boss and a sales manager. And I'm like, okay, what am I going to do here? I feel like I'm lost. And so I made a decision to really get into commercial and health insurance. And so I went to work for an organization called Federated Insurance that had a great training program. And that was 22 years ago, Richard. And here I am, no longer sell insurance. I coach insurance producers, but it's been a 22-year journey. But I'll be honest, the first 10 years of my insurance career were just like my pro baseball career. I just wanted to fit in. I had the fear of comparison, failure, and judgment still kind of ruling my life. And I didn't perform near to what I was capable of in this industry because of all those fears. So, you know, when you tell the story of the hero, the journey, the superhero, most of my early life and childhood were spent as I was not in my superhero cape. Let's just say that.
Yeah. I have a similar story growing up. I grew up in, you know, the quintessential perfect American family. I had a mom and a dad, and they both were amazing. And I still have great relationships with both of them. And like, they were, you know, middle income, upper middle income as they grew up into their careers, you know, growing up. And like, I didn't struggle. And, you know, for anything really growing up, and I didn't have like the rag to riches story, but you know, I was the opposite, on the opposite of the spectrum. I wasn't the overweight kid. I was the scrawny little kid who was like, you know, a full head shorter than everyone else and started puberty later than everyone else, and like would get teased and picked on. And like, I had a roller backpack, which didn't help at all in middle school. And my only saving grace was I could do the pull-ups, right? Because I weighed nothing. Right. I was like 60 pounds to everyone else's 120 pounds. So I could do pull-ups, you know, all day long. And so that was the only thing that kept me from getting teased on campus is, you know, well, I got teased all the way up until we did the test. And they were like, oh, you can actually do pull-ups. Maybe we shouldn't tease you as much. So
it elevated your status on the playground.
Elevated my status on the playground because I could do some pull-ups. But that was like all I had going for me. I was the nerdy kid who could do some pull-ups. And, you know, I was really into writing. And I got really good at creative writing, and that's how I got into storytelling. And, you know, it's kind of telling, like now my business is all about storytelling now. But I was the kid who, like, my history teacher in sixth grade, when I turned in my first essay, was like, I need to keep you after class. I didn't return, like, he passed all the papers out to everyone else but me. And he was like, I need to see you after class. And I freaked the F out because I was like, oh God, I've ruined it and I'm going to fail out of middle school. But he called me up after class and he was like, I didn't give you your paper back because I didn't want you to cry when I gave it to you. He's like, because I graded you at a post high school level for your writing.
Oh, what grade was this in?
Sixth grade. And he was like, your writing skills are significantly better than where they should be at your age. And he's like, so it would be unfair of me to grade you at a sixth grade level because you would get nothing from it. And he was like, so I'm going to grade your writing at a higher level and I'm going to tear it apart for you because you could take it. And I was like, I still had a freak out moment. And then he gave me a permission slip to do some coaching with him after class to like coach me on my writing. Cause he's like, I don't usually see a lot of kids with writing talent. So anyway,
that's awesome though. You know, really cool. You just made me realize though, Richard, I haven't really thought about this a whole lot, but what we do with our business is a lot of storytelling.
Yeah.
In fact, I don't know if you've read the book Building a Story Brand, but I'm a certified guide with Story Brand because of the whole storytelling concept. But as a kid, I loved writing stories.
Yeah.
And I haven't really thought about that until you said that. Now, I didn't go on and do it a whole lot after high school, but I loved writing stories. And I guarantee that's had an impact on what we do today for sure.
Yeah. And I know, like for me, I had two teachers. I had my sixth grade teacher who did that with me and my 10th grade teacher at the same time. It was like when I turned in my first couple of writing pieces in 10th grade. And both of those teachers were skilled writers themselves. And so when they saw my work come through, they were like, this guy could use some additional coaching for it. And so, and that's turned into,
that's awesome.
You know, that's what my business is now. And I have gone back to my high school class and taught a class with my high school teacher, my 10th grade teacher. And just
stuff
that he's teaching you has actually led to, you know, we run a $1 million business, right? He's like,
so that's awesome.
This stuff is valuable
when
applied the right way. So anyways, that's you know, part of my origin story was getting into writing early because.
Well, and what they, as they say in sports, game recognizes game. So your teachers obviously saw something in you, which was cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that's where, you know, you went into baseball, into marketing and whatnot. I went into writing and storytelling, but you know, I was the nerdy kid who didn't make a lot of friends and could do some pull-ups, but that was it. So what I want to dive into next is your superpowers, right? So every hero has their superpowers, whether that's their fancy flying suit made by their genius intellect or the ability to call down thunder from the sky or super strength. In the real world, heroes have what I call a zone of genius, which is either a skill or a set of skills that you were born with or you developed over the course of your career. And the superpower is what sets you apart. It allows you to help your people slay their villains, come on top in their journeys. The way I like to frame it for my guests is if you look at all the skills that you've developed over the course of building your business, you probably have a common thread that ties those skills together, and that's where you'd find your superpower. So what do you think your superpower is in your current business?
If you're watching or listening to the audio, you can't see behind me, but there are three portraits behind me and they have three words on them: consistency, persistency, and patience. Those are my superpower, Richard. Consistency, which is the ability to show up every week and do the same thing every week after week. Persistency is to keep doing it after everybody quits. And then patience is knowing that this is a very long game and you have to enjoy the process if you're going to have success. And I was not given any special skill. I was not given any special talent. And by the way, I did not have this as a kid. This was a learned skill over time. But I really started developing it late in college when I realized I had a chance to maybe play pro baseball.
Yeah.
This consistency of putting in the work off the field when no one is watching is what's going to help me get to the next level. And I'd tell you if there's one thing right now that we leverage as our superpower here at Complete Game Consulting, it's that consistency.
Yeah.
Our ability to show up every week, create content, put out what we need to do, run the process to grow our business. And that's the advice I'd give any entrepreneur. You want to have success in business, be consistent.
Yeah. I don't know if you see it on the video. I got chills. And the reason is because it's belyingly simple, right? Because it sounds like it should be easy, but it's the hardest thing in the world. And the story that pops into my head for that is my son was in gymnastics growing up because grandma was a professional gymnast. She was very good. And,
oh, wow.
Yeah. And to the point that like she's just turned 60 the other day, and I'm pretty sure she can still walk on her hands. Like, and she'll probably listen to this episode and call me out for telling people that she's 60 years old. So I apologize in advance, Mom, but congratulations. And so she got our kids into gymnastics real early. And I remember he was probably 7 at the time. And one of his best friends in this gymnastics class had all the talent in the world, right? Just incredibly skilled on the floor. Right. Incredibly. It didn't matter what it was. He was really good at it and he could pick stuff up really fast and it was just easy for him. And then my son was exactly the opposite. He didn't have this talent and it upset him that his friend who was the same age of him and would show up and, you know, play around and not do all the things and then get better results than he did. Right. And when he put in all the effort and practice at home and tried all this stuff and he just wasn't as good as his friend that just had all the talent. And I was like, and one of the things I regularly told him, and I was like, listen, consistency beats talent every day, right? Hard work beats talent every day. And I was like, because you can build yourself to the point where you can have the same level of skill as he does if he doesn't put in the work, right? I was like, when you put talent and hard work together, that's when you get Olympians. But I was like, but you can compete with someone who just has talent and doesn't have the work ethic. And not just compete, you can destroy them over time. And I was like, that's where like that first lesson for me was just like, it was a really tangible like lesson for my son, and he's picked up on it a lot. And you know, he doesn't do gymnastics anymore, he does some other things. He's actually a very talented fire spinner at this point. He's one of the most talented fire spinners in his age category on the planet because he's puts
that's a hobby. That's like a categorized hobby.
Yeah, he's very good. So, and
now I gotta ask, now I'm intrigued. When you say fire spinners, I'm thinking of being at like a Hawaiian luau and they're spinning the fire. Is that what we're talking about?
Like legitimately, he takes balls of fire, lights them like balls of like flaming things and lights them on fire and spins them around his body and dances to music with them.
Wow.
And he started that at 9 years old. And he did several professional performances this last summer. He performed for 2 block parties and he performed for a wedding. Like he's really good. So he took a lot of that consistency and the work. Yeah. He puts in the work every day. And he's not a talented dancer. He's not a talented mover. He doesn't have like, he doesn't know how to get into that flow state. But you can tell like he has learned the skill of being consistent and putting in the effort. And anytime he's around someone who has the skills that are better than him, he's like, teach me what you know, show me how you can do this. Cause he wants to be good at it. And I'm starting to see him build talent in places where he didn't have it, which is, I don't know, same kind of story. Anyways, it all comes from those 3 things: consistency, persistency, and patience.
I'll tell you what, man, if I'm building a team right now, we're in full scale mode. And you give me somebody who is not all that talented right now, but has the drive and the discipline to show up every day, I'll take that person over anybody with the skill and the talent, but maybe a little complacent because they're resting on their laurels, and resting on their talent. And we see that in the insurance industry all the time. Everybody wants to go out and hire the best. Give me somebody who's willing to put in the work off the field, even though they may not be the most talented, and that team will kick everybody's butt any day of the week.
Yeah.
And I have a special place in my heart for that because you can't see me fully on camera here. I'm 5'9". I weigh 160 pounds. I was not the prototypical size for a pitcher.
Yeah.
My stature says I should have never pitched professionally. But because of all the work I did off the field and did it consistently, that's why I got a chance to play. And so I will always take a chance on somebody who may not be that talented, but is going to show up and put in the work every day of the week.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm the same way. I was like, even when we hire for our staff, I tell people like, I will take someone who has no skills, but is willing to show up and communicate well over someone who has the skills every day of the week. And so like our hiring process is designed around that. And that's how we run it internally. And then like for our clients, one of the, you know, I told you before, and you know, my audience knows this, we run a podcast agency. And so all of our clients are, they're running podcasts to help grow their business. And we turn those into all their assets and everything. And we have a series we have called the 10 Commandments of Podcasting. And commandment number 2 is thou shalt be consistent. Right. And it says, because consistency over time is, it compounds results. It's, if you've ever heard in the, money management world, like when you're investing and stuff like that, they say money loves speed, but wealth loves time. And what they're talking about there is compound interest, right? So like money likes to move, cash flow is very, it likes to move quickly. But if you want to build wealth, it's consistency over time. And that happens, like it doesn't just work in the financial world. It works anywhere. It works in skill development. It works in social media and content development. All of that consistency over time gets you from like, it's slow and it's slow and slow until it's fast, until it hockey sticks. And, you know, we've seen that in our business, right? Where we were consistently putting the effort on our podcast and our stuff for the first 3 or 4 years of our business. And then last year, 2023, we 8.5x'd our business in 12 months, right?
Like, wow. Good for you.
Right.
Good.
It's slow until it's fast, but you have to put in the effort in those kind of things. And that's, you know, that consistency and persistency and patience, man, if you could embody that into everyone, that's.
And content, you bring up such a good point about content. And we see it all the time with our insurance producers. Take something like video content. It makes me laugh how many producers create a video or two and then they tell me they're not good at it. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, so let me get this straight. You tried recording a video twice and you have made the determination that you're not good. When you were a kid, there was a time you couldn't ride a bike. And then you could. There was a time when you didn't know how to drive a car. And then you did. And now today you could probably drive your car, look on your, even though you shouldn't look at your cell phone or eat your lunch, you could probably do both at the same time. That's video content. It's about putting in the reps. And you got to do that consistently, because if you put in the reps consistently, you're going to get good.
You're going to get good. I tell one of the things that my kids and I teach all the time is we talk about I call it the great suckitude, right? Whatever skill you have to go through the great suckitude. And mm-hmm. So we watch a lot of movies and TV shows and everything. And I always, you know, because I'm a storyteller, I'm always picking apart the hero's journey in the show. And I, you know, I point all the things out to my kids and whatnot. So we use them for lessons and everything. And the other day we were watching it was an anime series, and like there's a mage character who's like learning magic, and he was struggling with the magic there. And I was like, kids, what is he doing right now? And they all replied back, because I got 4 of them. They're all like, he's going through the great suckitude. And I'm like, that's right, the great suckitude. And so we celebrate that in our family. We celebrate the suckitude,
yeah,
because that's how you get good at anything, right? Is you have to go through putting in the reps and being bad at it, because yep. Nobody just starts off being good at anything. Right. Like you didn't start off knowing how to talk, knowing how to walk, knowing how to put food in your mouth. But yet you do all those things now without even thinking about it. And so you have to go through that phase of the suckitude. Yeah, so anyways,
agreed.
I appreciate that.
But that's the moment of truth, though. What you call suckitude, that's what separates the men from the boys, the women from the girls.
Mm-hmm.
When it sucks, are you willing to keep showing up?
Yeah.
Are you willing to play the long game that, you know, if you just keep showing up and trust the process, it's going to get better.
Yeah.
And I think that's where a lot of people fall off. A great example is podcast, right? Yeah. We're doing an episode right now. What did I hear? If you've done more than 10 podcasts, you're in the top 1% or 5% or something of podcasts.
Yeah, so I can give you the stats on that.
10!
Because I run a podcast company. I actually know those stats off the top of my head. So if you have done more than 10 episodes, you're in the top 3% of podcasters. If you've done
3%. Wow.
So 3%. If you've done more than 50 episodes, you're in the top 1%. And if you've passed 100 episodes, you're in the top 0.1% of podcasters. those are numbered in the millions, by the way. So getting past the 10th episode is a huge milestone that puts you in the top 3%. Like you're a 3%er, right? And because most people aren't willing to do the suckitude. They're not willing to be bad at it until you can get good at it.
Well, and I'm going to say something, and this might ruffle feathers, but I think because of who we are as a culture right now, Richard, if you can show up consistent, it is easier to win today than it's ever been, because so many people are willing to give up so quickly.
Absolutely.
If you can just show up consistently, you will separate yourself from everybody else. I see it. I have friends. I've been part of masterminds for entrepreneurs, and I watch these people over the years. And some of these people are onto their fifth different idea in 3 years because they're chasing a quick dollar,
mm-hmm.
versus saying, no, even if this business doesn't grow right now, I know what I'm here to do and I'm going to stay the course. And it's because nobody wants to apply that patience to keep showing up every day and knowing the win's not coming tomorrow. It might not come from next year, but you just have to keep showing up every day. So many people can't do that.
Yeah. That's like, I wish I could give someone an easy button and be like, listen, just put in the time. But that whole chasing the dollar thing is, it's really interesting. And I wish I could have, I had a word to describe this, but you know, I love your three words there. That's consistency, persistency, patience. Cause like, that's what I've seen in my business is I spent the first 10, 12 years of my business doing the chasing things, chasing offers, chasing different things that I could do, trying to build my business so I could get there faster. And when I realized, I was like, nope, I just need to put in the reps and get really good at one thing. Right. And that's where we started building the Push Button Podcast Agency and really getting into the storytelling stuff several years ago. And it was like, we're going to do this every day and we're going to refine this process and we're just going to get better and better at this one thing, to the point now that like when I get on sales calls with people, like it takes me 2 seconds to tell someone what our offer is. And they're like, I want to give you my money and I want to refer business to you. Right. Like, because we've just, we've put in the reps, we've gotten good at it, but we didn't start there. Right. Like, we didn't start being good at it. And you don't get good at something until you have the thing that you're going to put in the reps in over and over and over and over again. And that willingness to put in the consistency and the persistency over the long term, that's the patience. And then, you know, that's how you get to the point where you can 8.5x your business in a year. Right. That doesn't happen on accident.
Yeah, I've been listening to a lot of Alex Hormozi lately, which is, a lot of entrepreneurs probably know that name. And he's become a very popular individual. Yep, I've got my 100 million leads on the shelf too. And he said, you know, he talks about playing the infinite game. And Simon Sinek wrote a book about that, right? And when I heard Alex say it, it just really hit home for me, which is there's a big difference between a finite game and an infinite game. Finite game has rules, it has players, it has a beginning and an end and a score, and the score tells you who won or lost.
Yeah.
An infinite game doesn't have that. The only rule of the infinite game is to keep the game going.
Yeah.
And I think that's where a lot of entrepreneurs screw up, is they get into the business with a finish line already in mind. Instead, if they would imply an infinite mindset of, my only job is to keep the game going, enjoy the process while I keep the game going, so many more entrepreneurs would be successful.
Oh man, that's one of my favorite things. And I tell this to my kids, I tell this to everyone I meet. It's like my one message that if I could get across people, like I wish people would just understand it. And I don't know how to get people to understand it yet. So maybe just more repeating of this stuff is like, the only business is the only game that you can play where you can never lose if you just don't give up, right? If you just keep going, you will win at some point. Like, that's not the way other games are played, but that is the way business is played. And Alex, actually, if you are listening to this and you haven't picked up this book, it's worth every cent of the $9 he charges you for this book. It's only for the last chapter in the book where he talks about that dice metaphor, about playing that dice game, because that's the metaphor he uses, where he talks about, it's like, hey, you know, you don't know how many sides your dice is, right? And, you know, someone else might have another one and they get there faster by rolling. You know, they've only got 20-sided dice and it turns green on every one of them. And yours might be 100-sided dice, but if you keep rolling it, eventually you will turn all the sides green, right? And that's like, that's just the way this game works. And yeah, I'm a huge fan.
Well, and I, you know, I hope my message resonates with people, because I think the whole word entrepreneur too, right? It's become a lot cooler these days than it used to be. And so you got a lot of kids coming out of college that want to be entrepreneurs. We didn't have a lot of kids back, and I graduated from college in 2000. Entrepreneurism wasn't as big back then. But I'm a story of somebody, Richard. I didn't grow up with the entrepreneur mindset. Yeah. Both of my parents were teachers. I was raised in a family that preached safety, you know, get a job, put food on the table, have a retirement plan. And it took me 41 years to finally go out on my own and try this thing called entrepreneurship. So anybody who's listening that maybe is asking themselves if they have what it takes, it took me 41 years to figure it out. It's never too late.
Yeah, it's never too late. I was a little bit the opposite. My parents were also employees, and so we didn't have a lot of the business stuff going on. But for reasons unknown to me, my dad brought me home a copy of Rich Dad, Poor Dad book when I was like 11 years old.
And I wish I would have had that back then. Yes.
Yeah. And so he put that book in my hands and I read it like 6 times in a row, like over the course of a couple of days. And I was like, this is different. And I want to know like everything there is to know here. And I convinced my parents when I was like 13, I don't remember what grade that is, but somewhere like between middle school and high school, that I didn't need to go to after school care anymore. And what I would like to do instead was get dropped off at Barnes and Noble so I could read all the books I couldn't afford to buy.
Oh,
And they let me do it. And so I used, back in the day when Barnes & Noble used to have like chairs, I would go over and sit in the business, marketing, and leadership section and just grab a stack of books and just read them cover to cover every single day. And I remember at least a couple of times, a couple of like people that are my age now would be like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I'm reading books that I can't afford. And they're like, that's crazy. And I'm like, might be, but you know, I was just, it was what I did. So I got the-
Yeah, but I got to tell you, man, I love those stories.
Yeah.
Right? Like you going, you at that age to have the, what's the word I'm looking for? The presence or the perspective that I'm going to go to Barnes & Noble and essentially use it as my library.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm a big follower of Gary Vaynerchuk, Gary V, how he used to talk about it being a kid. He loved spending time figuring out where he was going to put his lemonade stand signs because he wanted to figure out where he could get the most attention. And that's where his marketing mindset started. Like kids like that who had that kind of perspective at that young age, I love those stories.
Yeah.
So hearing you at age 13 to have the cojones be like, I don't want to go to after school. I want to go to Barnes & Noble and read. Like no kid at that age had that mindset. And it's not a surprise you're having. It's not a surprise you're successful.
Yeah. It didn't help with the teasing on campus, but it did help with growing.
Yes.
It did help with growing my business later in life. And actually,
I
have my high school yearbook somewhere in, you know, collecting dust somewhere. And it did say on, you know, they put the, you know, most likely to, you know, like live in your parents' basement or whatever it was. Mine was most likely to be a millionaire. And I'm like, I haven't reached that yet, but.
Oh, there you go. That's awesome.
My friend.
I didn't know better back then, but that is something I would have loved to win in high school.
Yeah.
For sure.
That's just to say my friends recognized that I was nuts early on. So that was, you know, I was one of those kids that like, I convinced my dad to give me a loan for stuff. I was like, can you give me $50? I'll pay you back 10% interest, which is like, I don't know. It was like $55 back. And take me to the big box store, which was Smart and Final. I don't know if those are everywhere, but it's like a miniature Costco. And So I bought all the big chocolate bars, like the big fat ones that you can't get on campus. And I stuffed my backpack full of them. Didn't have room for my schoolwork. Wasn't going to bring my schoolwork with me. And I sold them on campus for, I was making like $2 a pop on them. And
love those stories.
I made about $1,500 before I tell people I had my first government shutdown because they told me I couldn't sell on campus without a business license. And I was too young to get a business license. So I was no longer allowed to sell on campus. But I made some money first, and I also got my first real lesson in business, which was the difference between profit and like your revenue. Because I remember like I had $50 and I owed my dad $55 for the loan that he gave me, and I sold my candy and I had $100 then. So had to pay my dad back $55, and then I had $45 left that I had to go back to the store and buy more candy with in order to continue the business. And I was like, I'm actually like $5 short. Like I'm minus $5. I was like, I don't know how this worked. And I had to go back to Barnes & Noble and start looking up profit and margin and all that stuff so I could actually understand what was happening here. And then realize that
time to raise your prices.
So anyways, that was my first couple of lessons there.
That's such a cool story. I thank you for sharing that. That I love those stories because again, growing up as a kid who wasn't surrounded by people who had an entrepreneurial mindset like that. Now yours sounds like it just came naturally, which is phenomenal. But I have a lot of kids I grew up with that had that. And I kind of, in some ways, am jealous of that.
Yeah.
Because those are the people who have gone on and probably have had a lot longer success than I've had because they've had that mindset surrounding them their whole life.
Yeah. So the reason I tell the story actually is for our audience, just to give like a juxtaposition, because I also didn't have the entrepreneur people around me. So I had to go and find them. And for me, I found them in books, right? Like that's where I was finding them. And that's like, it's just an encouragement that like, hey, if you don't have those voices around you, they exist, right? Whether it's Barnes & Noble or the library or nowadays podcasts and YouTube and stuff like this, subscribe to a show like this one, or I imagine your show is very similar, right? To pick up these mindsets and learn from people who can teach you what the journey looks like.
Absolutely. No, my first mentor, you know, I will tell you, I wasn't really into professional development, personal development, Richard, until we moved to Colorado. So Amy and I both grew up here in Wisconsin. 2014, we moved to Colorado. And for whatever reason, I started searching for mentors. And I think what people don't understand is a lot of the mentors you have in life are people you've never met, right? The people you read about in books. And I bought a course from Darren Hardy. I don't know if you know who Darren Hardy is, but he is a leadership expert. And I just remember I bought a course of his for like $900. And it was called Insane Productivity. So it was how to get more done every single week you know, with time blocking and owning your calendar and things like that. And that's where that journey started, where I was like, wow, if I just take the time to spend every week getting better at something, where am I going to be 5 or 10 years from now?
Yeah.
But it didn't happen until I found myself in a place where I was kind of starting over in Colorado, and I was seeking those mentors to help me. And that's really where my personal development journey began.
Yeah.
And it hasn't slowed down since. And I think if there's one thing I can owe to me sitting here at age 46 with my own business successfully growing, it's because of that journey that started 10 years ago.
Yeah. For me, you know, if you get into the personal development leadership world in the books and everything, you sort of learn that early on. And the obsession that it started for me, and that I had this for years, is the collection of skills, right? The way, like, collecting skills the way other people collect stamps or coins, right? And the reason it stuck, and I couldn't always have told you it in this language. This is more recent language in my life. But the idea that if you're not growing, you're dying, right? Like a shark, if a shark's not swimming, they die. Like, they have to be in constant motion, right? You know, or a fruit on a tree, like, it's either ripening or it's rotting, right? And so you either are growing or you're dying. And that's really your only options. And so for me, it sort of started this lifelong obsession with picking up new skills. And so I'm constantly like, I've got the stuff that I'm learning in my business, but I always have something else that I'm working on learning. Like, at the current 100% moment in time, I'm learning piano and I'm learning to juggle. And those two things go together, by the way.
Wow.
I started learning piano and realized I couldn't get my left hand to work. So I started learning to juggle, which has really helped with the left hand part. And so it's like,
that's awesome.
Learning piano, learning to juggle. But like, over the last couple of years, it's been like, I learned to draw. I learned to do calligraphy. I learned how to do carpentry, and I learned to do plumbing, and I learned to do electrical, and I learned to do cabinetry work. And my son and I are learning to windsurf. We're doing martial arts. And it's like, it's not even the idea that I want to become a master in any of these areas. It's just constantly working that brain pathway of learning how to learn, right? Learning how to learn things. Yep. And then you get to a point now, and I've been passing the skill on to my son, is like, you can pick up skills really fast. And like, to the point that it blows other people away. They're like, how do you pick up skills like that? I'm like, because the skill that I work on the most is the skill of learning how to learn. And like, if I could pass anything on to someone and be like, hey, if you want a superpower in life that you can develop, like that you can just create for yourself, learn how to learn.
Yeah, I what you just said resonated with me on such a high level, because right now one of the skills, so I use a planner every week I absolutely love called Clever Fox. So if you're watching the video, it looks like this. So this is my calendars in here. And one thing I love about this is every month it asks you to try a new skill. It says, what skill are you going to learn or improve upon? And right now, Richard, I'm in the season of practicing to become a better golfer. I have a lot of friends who are really good golfers, and I'm sick of playing with them and getting my butt kicked and donating money, because we always have to play for money and I never win. So I said, I'm going to put the time in to get better and get the instruction. But what you just said, the part I love about the most is we have an indoor simulator 2 minutes from our house. Mm-hmm. I love going over there and practicing one shot 100 times in a row.
Yeah.
Same shot, one over and over and over. And that process of getting better, mm-hmm. The process of learning is where the success is. And we actually have a rule in our company. You'll love this. I make our employees pick one mental and or physical challenge every single quarter they have to partake in.
Nice.
And what that has done is that has, I have an employee who did the 75 hard to get in shape, and she freaking loves it now. She's in shape, working out twice a day. The same employee picked up painting by learning how to do it on YouTube. She's posting her paintings on LinkedIn right now. They're phenomenal. I have another employee who decided to just go get her pilot's license. It's like, it's been so cool to see the growth that comes out of this by just saying, hey, every quarter, I want you to challenge yourself physically or mentally.
Just pick something and do it.
Because you're going to constantly get better if you do.
Yeah. Yeah. That is absolutely true. And it's one of the things that, like I said, I've been doing it for a long time, but I've only recently started to realize that it's a differentiator in between people who stagnate and people who continue to thrive, right? And you can see it consistently in every category of life. The people who, like, you don't have to go off the, you know, like, as you age, you don't have to get worse. You don't have to get older. You don't have to get, 100%. You know, soft, right? You don't have to. You know, there's all sorts of things that, like, we become complacent. And a lot of times it seems to happen in that, you know, early 30s, early 40s time frame, where people start getting into that midlife stuff. And like, midlife crises happened to people who stopped.
Yep.
Right. If you talk to people who are constantly learning and picking up skills and challenging themselves, they don't have midlife crises because they're living life. Right.
And 100%.
So the thing that has, like, the most recent sort of like light bulb moment for me has been how that ties back into storytelling. And so, you know, because our business is all about storytelling, I'm always looking for ways that story, you know, that ties into storytelling. And so your business doesn't really matter what it is. You're in the attention business, right? And the attention business mm-hmm. is like, it doesn't matter what you do. You could do insurance. You could be doing pest control. You could be, you know, asphalt doing stuff. You're in the attention business. And the business that what that means is you have to be able to get people's attention. And storytelling is the baseline of like human communication. And that's how we collect attention and distribute attention is with storytelling. And so for me, one of the things I've realized is that the collection of skills means that you are constantly putting yourself into new places, right? And doing new things and trying new things, whether it's, you know, if you want to have a good story to tell, you have to live a good story, right? You have to have good food. You have to have good experiences. You have to have good friends. You have to have good sex. You have to do all of these things. You have to actually live life. And when you do that, those things form the foundation of your ability to tell a story. Right. And the more you live, the better your story you can tell. And that will absolutely impact the bottom line of your business if you learn to tell stories about your business and your life and how your life and business fit together.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think a lot of people overthink marketing. They get so wrapped up in the metrics of marketing, which are very important. But what we forget too often is the message.
Yeah.
You know, in our industry, when we work with insurance teams, one of our, you know, most important lessons we teach them is, guys, just as much as you want to tell your story, you have to tell your prospect story, right? If you want to get their attention, you have to be able to tell a story they can put themselves into. And I really believe a good marketing message, which is storytelling, comes down to answering three questions. Who are you talking to? What are you saying? And where are you saying it?
Yeah.
If you get clear on those three things, who are you talking to? What are you saying? And where are you saying it? You're going to have effective marketing. As long as you take the time to sit down and really understand who your prospect is.
Yeah.
And you build, to your point, the storytelling, you build a good story that draws them in, you're gonna be effective with your marketing. And I see too many agencies in the insurance industry want to go right to the metrics or go to the looks of marketing, and they skip the message. And that's why they're wasting money on marketing. Start with the message, the storytelling, marketing will take care of itself.
Marketing will take care of itself. I think it's a great sort of like transition point to flip into the next question here, right? So we talked for a while actually about superpowers, consistency, persistency, patience. The flip side of every superpower is, of course, the fatal flaw, right? So just like every Superman has his kryptonite or Wonder Woman can't remove her bracelets of victory without going mad, you've probably had a flaw that's held you back in your business, something you struggled with. For me, it was a couple of things. I struggled with perfectionism for a long time, where I was like, if it wasn't perfect, I wouldn't ship it, which means I was shipping nothing because nothing's perfect. And the other one I struggled with for a long time was lack of self-care, which really brought itself out in not having a good relationship with time, not having good boundaries with my clients and stuff like that. And you know, there was probably another one too, is being a visionary, but lacking the discipline to implement, right? Like I had a lot of those things, I had to work on fixing them. So, but I think more important than what is the flaw is how have you worked to overcome it? So our audience might learn a little bit from your experience there.
Yeah, there's two that stand out. Number one, I am a natural born people pleaser.
Yeah.
And that can lead you to saying yes to things you shouldn't. It can make it easy for people to put themselves and their priorities on your calendar. Mm-hmm. And it can have you chasing opportunities you shouldn't be. And by the way, avoiding tough conversations with people. And so that's one that I've had to really overcome, is learning how to say no more. And learning how to have candid conversations with people and know that it's not personal, it's just business. And I think that's one that I've definitely worked on hard, that I'm getting better. I'm still a work in progress, but I'm getting better. And then the second one would be, I kind of tie this to being an athlete. It's tying my self-worth into the results I create. I think that's a trap a lot of athletes get themselves into, is they tie their worth into the result they create. And so they're in this up and down. Like when I was a pitcher, if I was 4-1 with a 2.0 ERA, I was awesome. If I was 1-4 with a 4.5 ERA, I sucked. And I think it's easy to get caught in that, tying your results to your self-worth, when you have to learn that you are not your results. If you just follow the process, no matter what happens with the results, it does not mean you're a failure. It just means the plan failed. Tweak it, change it, try something else. And I think that's another area I've had to work on really hard, because you fail all the time as an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
just knowing that failure has nothing to do with who you are. It's just your plan failed. Figure out a new plan and try something else.
That's a hard lesson. And I'm still working on that myself. I have a thing, Orrin Woodward, Chris Brady, they wrote a book called The Launching Leadership Revolution. They talk about this concept called plan, do, check, and adjust. And which has been sort of like how I've worked through that whole, like, not tying my self-worth to my results. Because, you know, as an entrepreneur, you have lots of failing, right? It's, you know, 100 failures for one win, and the one win makes for all the losses kind of thing. That's the game you're playing. And so you have to know that and realize that, like, that's where, you know, we work on celebrating our failures, right? And celebrating our, you know, the suckitude. And so, like, we do that, like, even at the dinner table with our kids. But, you know, at the end of the week, we do, like, hey, what was your biggest failure this week? And then we celebrate it, right? Things like that. And realize that, like, that's a mindset that you have to cultivate. And for a lot of us, we didn't grow up with that. So, like, it's a mindset you have to cultivate for yourself. The other side of that, though, I actually find more interesting. Real quick, repeat your first flaw that you talked about.
People-pleasing.
People-pleasing, yeah. So the people-pleasing aspect is, I think it's really interesting to me because we get into that people-pleasing mind a lot for our business. And one of the things that was like a huge light bulb moment for me was that you have to learn how to say no before you can learn how to say yes. Right. And we get into the trap as entrepreneurs, learning how to say yes first without first knowing how to say no. And I don't have a well thought out like answer for this yet, but like I've got my work in progress sort of like idea here is it for me, it was learning in my business what to say no to that allowed me to have massive growth. And so for me, it was learning how to say no to like everything else from an offer standpoint. Is like, hey, we offer this thing, and if it doesn't fit into this world, it's a no, right? So it's like learning to say no to the offers was the first one. Because as entrepreneurs, a lot of times we're like, hey, we can offer this, and we can offer this, and we can offer the other thing. And you realize that like that comes down to that dollar chasing thing. It's like, hey, if I say yes to this, I can add more dollars to the bottom line. And then, you know, you go back to that patience, consistency, persistency, that kind of stuff. If you'll just say no, learn to say no to all the things that are outside of your offer, right? Then eventually it will grow. Like that's the kind of thing there. And then the other, so there's saying yes or no to the right offers and then saying no to the right people, right? And so it's like offers, people, and then probably your message and like learning how to say no to all those things. What that does is it unlocks your ability to say yes, right? And that's what I think people miss the mark on that is they say yes to things without first learning to say no. And so for me, when I realized what we should be saying no to, it opened the doors to all the things we could say yes to. And so like in early in 2023, I was like, we know exactly what we're doing in all these categories. And so I could, one of my business associates is a friend of mine. He's the marketing director for the Pokemon company. He's responsible for like $8 billion of revenue on their bottom line over the last few years. And so like when he says do things, I listen. And one of the things he said to me is like, once you learn to say no, he's like, the next goal is say yes until it hurts and then fix the pain. Mm-hmm. And so like we did that all last year and it was like we started saying yes to things like cold marketing and started saying yes to affiliate outreach stuff. We started saying yes to stages and we started saying yes to like all sorts of things that we could say yes to that fit in our lane. And it caused pain, obviously. Like you can't, you know, it was say yes till it hurts was the goal that I was going for. And so we did that. And then you start working on how to fix the pain that saying yes creates. But now you're saying yes in the right categories. You're saying yes to the things that are actually going to grow your business. And it's such an ethereal skill because you can't just say, hey, these are the things you need to say yes and no to. You have to like learn for yourself how to set up learning to say no, because that's what's going to allow you to say yes and grow. So I know that's convoluted, but that's
no, it's, you got me thinking because we just had that moment in the fourth quarter. You know, I think back when Steve Jobs came back to Apple. At the time he came back, I want to say they offered something like 300 products. Mm-hmm. And he came back and he said, scrap it. We're narrowing it down to 4. And that's when they came out with the iPad, iPod, the iMac, and then the iPhone, and the rest is history. We just had that moment in our business in Q4 where we were probably offering a lot of different things, but then we got really clear that, you know what? We only offer 4 things. We don't do anything else. Everything else is a no.
Yeah.
And if what we are engaging in doesn't help us grow our business in one of those 4 buckets or buy back our time, it's a no.
Yeah. You learn to say no.
And once we got there, Richard, man, it's been a fast ride of growth since then, because it hurt, because I'm a guy who likes to say yes. But yeah, once it gets a lot more comfortable to say no, your growth of your business will quickly pick up.
So since I'm only a few quarters ahead of you on that whole journey of learning to say, no to all the right things, is once you say no and you know what you're saying no to, just open yourself to saying yes to everything that fits, right? Like, if it fits, say yes to it, and then figure out how to make it happen afterwards. Right. And that was, it was one of the things, like, I guess my business associate would have told me that. He's like, if you want massive growth, say yes till it hurts. Right. But you can't say yes until you learn to say no.
Yeah.
So, like, now that you've mastered what you're saying no to, that opens that door to say yes to a whole bunch of things. And
case in point, man, I'll just say it live on this show. You and I talked offline before this episode started, and I told you exactly what we're doing today. Your service that you guys offer is exactly what we're looking for. And that's the being open to yes. That conversation would have never happened had I not said yes to getting on this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
And so to your point, if it fits the lane or lanes of where you're trying to go, say yes as often as you can. But everything else should be a no.
Everything else should be a no. And it's, in the world of talking about superpowers, that's one of those things. It's another superpower you can develop. Right? You can develop the ability to say no. And then once you've developed the ability to say no, it gives you the ability to say yes. And saying yes to the right things is really what skyrockets growth.
100%.
Right.
That's a great way of saying it. Say yes to the right things. Sounds pretty simple.
Yeah.
A lot harder to implement.
It is hard to implement. Like, I spent a good, 20 years in my business saying yes to all the wrong things because I started with saying yes and not with saying no.
Yep. 100%.
So, I learned that, that one of my favorite things is, lesson repeated until lesson learned. I spent a lot of time repeating that lesson until it sunk in.
Well, it's just like a lot of people spend 10 years repeating year one of their career, right? There's a lot of people who believe they should be promoted and get bonuses and pay raises because they've been doing things for a certain amount of time. But if you've just repeated the same thing over and over, you've repeated year one over and over again, you really haven't gotten any better. And I think the point you're making is, especially in the world of entrepreneurism, you're going to fail. And the more you are okay with failing and let it learn from it, the faster you're going to grow.
Yeah, absolutely. That is exactly what I'm saying. So
valley of suckitude, you call it.
Yeah, the great suckitude. So I got a couple more questions for you.
The great suckitude.
About your common enemy, right? So every superhero has an arch nemesis, right? And it's a thing that they constantly have to fight against in their world. In the world of business, it takes a lot of forms, but generally speaking for this show, we put it in the context of your clients. And it's a mindset or a flaw that they come to you with that you constantly have to fight to overcome so that you can actually get them the result that they came to you for in the first place. So in the world of helping your producers actually produce, what is the common enemy that you regularly have to fight against?
It's one thing that leads to the other. It's a lack of clarity. And without clarity, they're not confident. And without confidence, they're not consistent. And the real culprit, the real enemy in our industry is outdated training. A lot of people come in our industry wide-eyed, bright-eyed, ready to go, but they're kind of left out on their own to figure it out. How to win, or they're given training that's 30, 40 years old. And what happens is they quickly become burnt out, dejected. They're driven, but they're dejected. And the second they lose clarity, they lose confidence. The second they lose confidence, they lose consistency. And right now, the reason they're not winning is they're just not consistent. They don't have a weekly plan they can execute to have success. And so what we're bringing them, Richard, is a modern marketing plan to go out and build credibility with prospects so they can walk in the doors of prospects with credibility and trust built. And when they have that clarity, they will be confident. And when they have the confidence, they'll be consistent. One breeds off the other.
Yeah. So I want to say something that you said below the surface, but didn't come out in your words. And I want to see if this is true. But one of the things that I hear in what you're saying is that one of the keys to being consistent is having a set of actions that you can take and not a set of results that you're looking for. Right. And so like, I know in the insurance world, this is probably one of those outdated rules, but it's like, are you making your 20 calls a day? Right. Like, it, you can control the 20, making 20 calls. You can't control what's going to happen on those calls. That's the result. You don't get to control the result. You get to control the input. So you have to be able to consistently put in the things that you can do, right? You have to, for us, it's show up on our podcast every week, right? Like that consistency of doing that work is what leads to the results. And so to your point, they get the dejection happens because they're not getting the result because they're trying to focus on controlling the results. And you can't control the result. You can only control the input.
Totally agree. In our industry, a producer will be given a goal of, hey, you need to go out and sell $150,000 this year. There really won't be a plan of action to help them get there. So they'll set a plan like you just said. I'm going to make 20 calls a day, three times a week.
Yeah.
Cool. Now, you could call that a more traditional form of prospecting, but hey, cold calling is still part of the game plan. But here's what separates the winners and the losers. A loser, and I use the word to describe somebody who's not winning, it's not about their self-worth. A loser is somebody who'll just pick up the phone 20 times a day and not figure out why it's not working. They won't try to get better. They're literally just trying to make 20 check marks a day. A winner is going to go, okay, I went 0 for 20 today. What can I do tomorrow to improve my message? Where can I go study about cold calling to get better? And how can I come back tomorrow a better cold caller than I was today?
Yeah.
And even if I don't have more success tomorrow than I had today, I'm willing to show up the next day and the day after that, because I know if I put the reps in, I'm going to get better. That's what separates people.
Yeah. So that's a real world example. I still do all the sales calls for our company, and I record every single one of them. And I have currently one of the things that I have my personal assistant doing is they're going through all of our call recordings and they're pulling out all the pitches and as little individual like clips. And we're going to have like a whole training library of like, hey, here's the pitches that work. Here's the pitches, right? And we're doing the same thing with like the questions our clients ask us or our potential clients ask us. We're going to turn them into a whole FAQ library. So we're like, we're reviewing the work that we're doing and looking at how do we make this message better? How do we make it connect better? How do we shorten it and be more brief with what we're saying? And you use those reps to practice, right?
100%.
And on your, you know, every time you get on your pitch, you can adjust something. You can change a little bit, see how it works, right? Because every time you get on the phone, you get an opportunity to try again and to be a little better this time than you were last time. And that's how you get better, is you put in the reps and, you know, apply the persistency, I guess, to trying to get better.
100%.
So I only got a couple more questions for you. Next one is your driving force, right? The flip side of your common enemy, right? Your common enemy is what you fight against. Your driving force is what you fight for. So just like, you know, Batman fights to save Gotham, or Spider-Man fights to save New York, or Google fights to index and categorize all the world's information. What is it that you're fighting for with your business? What's your mission, so to speak?
Yeah, we have two North Stars we apply that drives us every week. Number one, we create our content. Our goal with our content, Richard, is to help 25,000 insurance producers sell their first $250,000. So if you go look at our content on social media, it's really geared for those early stage insurance producers who are just trying to sell their first $250,000. We've built a membership site, which has become one of our main revenue streams. And the whole mission with the membership site is to help 1,000 producers get to $1 million. Mm-hmm. So we apply this approach where content, it's free, right? Free content's to help you sell your first 250. Our membership site's to get you to $1 million. And then at $1 million, that's where we often work with people one-on-one. And so we apply that rule to how we do business. That's our mission. I see a big gap right now in this industry because a lot of producers are sold the dream to make a lot of money and have a lot of schedule flexibility, but no one is helping them actually learn how to do it. And so when I saw that gap and I knew I had a gift with coaching, I said, we're going to fill that gap and we're going to give them the training, and modern training especially, to teach them how to win today. If the industry doesn't want to do it, we'll do it for them. And we have seen that gap. We feel proud. We feel we're filling that gap. And I know it's creating a lot of excitement in the insurance industry, because when we work with people, we get a lot of feedback that this is very different than what they're used to. And that's what I love to hear.
That's awesome. Yeah. We feel the same way, right? A lot of the, you know, people who come and work with us, obviously we're in very different spaces, but like that message at the end of the day, like, this solves a problem that I had. Like, that's what we're going for. And so I love that.
The Hero Show will be right back. Hey there, fellow podcaster. Having a weekly audio and video show on all the major online networks that builds your brand, creates fame, and drives sales for your business doesn't have to be hard. I know it feels that way because you've tried managing your show internally and realize how resource intensive it can be. You felt the pain of pouring 8 to 10 hours of work into just getting 1 hour of content published and promoted all over the place. You see the drain on your resources, but you do it anyways because you know how powerful it is. Heck, you've probably even tried some of those automated solutions and ended up with stuff that makes your brand look cheesy and cheap. That's not helping grow your business. Don't give up though. The struggle ends now. Introducing Push Button Podcasts, a done-for-you service that will help you get your show out every single week without you lifting a finger after you've pushed that stop record button. We handle everything else: uploading, editing, transcribing, writing, research, graphics, publication, and promotion, all done by real humans who know, understand, and care about your brand almost as much as you do. Empowered by our own proprietary technology, our team will let you get back to doing what you love while we handle the rest. Check us out at pushbuttonpodcast.com/hero for 10% off the lifetime of your service with us, and see the power of having an audio and video podcast growing and driving micro celebrity status and business in your niche without you having to lift more than a finger to push that stop record button. Again, that's pushbuttonpodcast.com/hero. See you there. And now, back to the Hero Show.
So for my audience who watches this regularly, I'm going to skip a couple of our regular questions because we're getting long in our conversation here. But I have one more question I want to ask you, and it's your guiding principles, right? One of the things that makes heroes heroic is that they live by a code. For instance, Batman never kills his enemies. He only ever brings them to Arkham Asylum. So as we wrap up the interview, I want to talk about the top one, maybe two principles that you live your life by, run your business by, maybe something you wish you'd known as you when you started your career, your life, you know, all those years ago.
I would say the number one principle I live by is just practice what you preach. It really ruffles my feathers when I see somebody out pontificating and they're selling a certain concept or belief to grow business, but you know they don't practice what they're selling. And as a coach, I think you can get exposed really quickly if you're doing it that way. And so one of the pillars I live by is I will never talk about something I haven't done. And so everything we coach, I tell you, one of the proudest things I'm proud of with running our business is everything we coach, we still do. And so that is probably the biggest guiding principle for me is whatever I'm going to teach you to do, I want you to have the trust I'm actually still doing it and getting better at it myself.
Yeah, that's wonderful, right? We don't offer a coaching business, but we want the same kind of thing. For whatever reason, we're in the service space. Our businesses, our clients always ask us for, like, you know, their our expertise in different areas. So we end up doing coaching regardless, even though that's not what people pay us for. Mm-hmm. And so, like, same way, right? You know, the Alex Hormozi book, $100 Million Leads, he talks about the four categories you should be running leads in. And so, like, we talk about the same thing, right? We have our four categories that we're running leads in. We don't use the same ones that Alex does. I call them buy, borrow, build, and blitz. Right. And so, you know, buy is buying ads and borrow is like getting, you know, what you're doing, getting on someone else's podcast and borrowing our audience. We're getting on someone's stage and speaking. And we do all of those things. And then build is like building your own audience. Right. And then blitz is like cold outreach and stuff like that. And so when people talk to me about our business, I'm like, listen, these are the four categories you should be running leads in. Build is like what we teach at Push Button Podcast, what we actually implement for people. But in our own business, we do all four of them, right? We have stuff going in all four of these categories, and here's what it looks like in our business, right? Yep. And so when I'm telling, you know, I say, hey, you should use our service. I was like, we use our service internally. Our business is listed as one of our clients. We have a whole slot on one of our client slots, and we do all of our own stuff. And then we do the same thing in all those other categories. And I was like, so when I recommend you to do it, I'm not saying you should do it and I don't. Like, we do these things for our own business. We actually run three podcasts internally. So we have three client slots for our business, right? And so that's it's just part of what we do. And so it's that integrity and the consistency to say, like, hey, I'm not asking you to do something that we're not going to do internally. And then, like, even when it looks at outside of things that we don't actually run business in, we don't have offers for you in, these are the same ways that we're using these things. We do all of these things, and you should be doing them too. If you have questions, here's the resources we recommend. So
that's awesome. Nope, it's what you guys have built. I'm only getting a quick, you know, an early look at this. It looks pretty impressive, man. And, you know, nothing says credibility when you're your own client.
Yeah. You're running your own stuff, right? It was one of those game changing moments where you realize you're like, oh, I should probably be doing this myself.
Right? Like, well, I'll give you a great example. So we have a program called the Social Media Sales Academy. It's a 6-week course I teach where we teach insurance professionals how to use LinkedIn and content on LinkedIn to grow their business. And the best thing I love talking about that is I ask people, do you like the way I create content on LinkedIn? Do you like our content? Yes. I'm going to teach you how we do it.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's a better sales pitch out there than if you like how we do it, I am going to teach you how we do it so you can do it yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think that is a great place to wrap our interview, right? Run your business with integrity, do the things you say you're going to do, that kind of stuff, and actually show up and do the work that you're doing, you recommend your clients do. Yeah. And so I do wrap every interview with something I call the Heroes Challenge. And I do this to help get access to stories that we might not otherwise find on our own. So the question is simple. Do you have someone in your life or in your network who you think has a cool entrepreneurial story? Who are they? First names are fine. And why do you think they should come share their story with us on the Hero Show? First person that comes to mind for you.
I don't know why I thought of it, but the guy I just interviewed on our podcast, Dre Baldwin, he is a successful business coach. I loved his story because he played professional basketball in Europe for 8 years, yet he didn't even start on his high school basketball team. He got cut from his college team as a junior and ended up playing intramural basketball, yet he found a way to play professional basketball in Europe for 8 years and get paid handsomely to do it.
That's cool.
It's his mindset. His mindset is so, and he's now an unbelievable entrepreneur as a business consultant to others. And he's got a program called Work on Your Game Academy. And so, yeah, he is the first guy that comes to my mind.
Awesome. Well, we'll see if we can reach out later and get an introduction to him. But on this show, and you know, we have the send off in comic books. There's always the crowd of people at the end who are cheering and clapping for their acts of heroism. So as we close, where can people find you? Where can they light up the bat signal, so to speak, and say, hey, Andy, we'd love your help. And then more importantly than where is who are the right types of people to actually reach out?
Yeah. Number one, two places you can connect with me. Go to LinkedIn. We have a huge following there. Andy Neary, N-E-A-R-Y. I also have a video recording if people want to watch it on our brand, our four marketing pillars. If they want to go to completegameplaybook.com, they can go grab that if they like. And then the last question, what was the last question again?
Right types of people to reach out.
Right types of people. We work with insurance professionals, whether they sell commercial insurance, health insurance, life insurance, disability insurance, financial planning, you name it. We're here, we're helping them build credibility with their audience using the channels we didn't have available to us 5 to 10 years ago. So we, if they are an insurance professional, we can serve them.
Absolutely. And I know personally, at least one of our listeners is an insurance professional because they told me a couple of weeks ago that they were starting their insurance training for sales. So if you're listening, reach out to Andy and get the training. And you know, thank you so much today for coming on and sharing your story, Andy. I really appreciate just getting to hear your perspective and hear what it is that you guys do. It's been fascinating. Before we hit this stop record button, you have any final words of wisdom for my audience?
Just go back to what my wall behind me says. Build success comes by way of being consistent, persistent, and patient. And most of all, enjoy the journey. This is a long road and you gotta play the infinite game. Remember, your job is just to keep the game going.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Andy. Appreciate your time today.
You bet. Thank you, Richard.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of The Hero Show, where we work to shift the cultural narrative around entrepreneurship and celebrate the heropreneurs who make our world a better place. Don't forget to visit our website at theheroshow.tv, where you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Spotify, or via RSS, so you'll never miss an episode. If you found value in our show, we'd truly appreciate a rating on iTunes. Or better yet, share it with a friend to help us spread the message of entrepreneurship as a force for good. Curious to learn more about the stories and insights of these incredible heropreneurs? Check out our in-depth interviews and resources on our website. Together, let's support and inspire the next generation of entrepreneurs as they embark on their own heroic journeys. Join us again next week for another episode of The Hero Show, where we'll continue to explore the world of heropreneurs, their superpowers, and the positive impact they bring to our lives. Until then, stay heroic.